And we're going to be carrying on in the series that we've been looking at over the past few weeks called Practicing the Presence of God, kind of looking what it means to open up our lives to God every day. And when Pete first asked me to speak on this, I was actually really excited because for me, it's this subject that's had probably the biggest impact on my faith. My journey into this began a few years ago, probably 6 or 7 years ago, when I first moved to London. And I was going through a bit of a hard time. Things weren't working out that well for me. And I just remember kind of coming into the big city and feeling incredibly lonely, incredibly isolated. And I just asking that question, where, God, are you in all of this? And then my friend gave me this little devotional book. She suggested that I had a little read of it. And I thought I'd buy myself a copy, went onto Amazon, found the second-hand book. It was 10p, which means I wasn't entirely over-optimistic on the contents of it. But I kind of thought I'd buy it anyway, and it arrived. It was this tatty old book, like yellow pages, not that exciting. But as I started to read it, inside were these amazing writings from loads of different authors throughout the centuries. And all they kept on talking about was practicing the presence of God. And I hadn't got a clue what it meant. I had absolutely no idea what it was, how to do it. All I knew is that I wanted a relationship with God the way they had. I was jealous of it almost, and I think that sounds incredibly unholy to be jealous of saints. But I was. I wanted to know God that way. And so what I did was I kind of carried on reading, and as that phrase kept on cropping up, I tried to work out what is the common theme in all of this. And the common theme in these writings was that they'd put time into seeking God's presence, of prioritizing their relationship with God above anything else. And seeking God's presence, it isn't just something that was reserved for these writers. I think what I discovered was that it's what it means to be truly human, because we were created to walk and talk with God. And so practicing the presence of God, all that means is walking and talking with God in your everyday life. And that was what we were created for. Genesis 1, the beginning of the story, it paints this beautiful picture of Adam and Eve walking and talking in the garden with God, of humanity flourishing in the garden and tending to that garden with God. And I don't know how you feel about gardening, but for me, gardening is the worst thing possible. I can't think of a worse way to spend a Saturday afternoon. And if you came over to our house, which I'm going to apologise to Kate, who's in the front row, who lives with me, if you came over to our house, you'd find that fact to be very, very true. You'd kind of walk into the lounge and think, oh, they like a bit of interior design, that looks nice, a few IKEA cushions, great. But you'd come outside, and what you'd see, it's going to appear on screen, is an incredibly shameful picture of a patio that's incredibly overgrown with loads and loads of weeds. It isn't good at all. And the irony of this is that I think that patio has incredible potential for some great barbecues. There is amazing potential. I don't know if you can see, it's a bit of a sun trap. Saturday evenings, kind of the summer coming, it would be an absolutely amazing barbecue spot. But the reality is that vision is very, very far away from reality. And the reason I say all of this is because practicing the presence of God, for me, what I often think of is it's this incredible vision. I'm sold out for that. That sounds amazing. But the reality is often it looks a lot more like the overgrown patio full of weeds. But walking and talking with God, it isn't this unobtainable vision that's only reserved for the few kind of spiritual elite. Walking and talking with God just looks like inviting Jesus onto the patio and helping us tame the weeds. And that's kind of what I want to look at a bit tonight. You know, how do we ask God onto that patio? How do we ask him to tend the weeds in our life and plant the flowers and transform it? So, and I honestly believe that as we start to do that, as we take the faithful steps, we'll see transformation not just in our own lives, but in the lives of those around us. So we're going to jump straight into the Bible and look at a guy called Elijah who knew what it meant to walk and talk with God. So it's 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 9 to 18. And it will come up on screen, but I'm just going to give a little bit of context before we get going. So Elijah, he's a Hebrew prophet, which means that he basically listens to God, gets some words from God, and shares it to the people of God. But the problem is, at the moment, is that Israel, the people of God, they're in a civil war. So he is a prophet to the 10 tribes in the north, and they're led by Queen Jezebel and King Ahab. Now, the tricky situation is that they're not following God at the moment. They're worshipping an idol called Baal. And so it's not a great time, really, for Elijah to be a prophet. And the kind of the chapter beforehand, chapter 18, there's this incredible high moment in Elijah's career as a prophet. He basically Has this massive triumph over all of the false prophets of Baal. There's like altars, there's fire, chants, weird dances, like everything you could possibly want in a good Old Testament story. It's in chapter 18, have a little read. But the point is that he's on an incredible high. He is loving life right now. But when Jezebel hears that Elijah has defeated this false prophet Baal, she isn't happy at all. And she gives out a death warrant on Elijah. And in a moment, Elijah's life is spinning out of control. He's running scared. And he treks 40 days, 40 nights through the desert. And he ends up on Mount Horeb, which is known as the Mountain of God. And he's in a bit of a sorry state for himself. He finds a cave, kind of crawls in. And then we're going to join him on the side of the mountain in 1 Kings 19. So it says this. There he went into a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him. What are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I've been very zealous for the Lord Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenants, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. The Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart, shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenants, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. The Lord said to him, go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu son of Nimshi king over Israel and anoint Elisha son of Shaphat from Abel-Meholah to succeed you as prophet. Jehu will put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael and Elisha will put to death any who escape the sword of Jehu. Yet I reserve 7,000 in all Israel whose knees have not bowed down to Baal and whose mouths have not kissed him. I don't know if you've heard that story before. In my Sunday school, this was kind of one of the favourite stories. And I grew up in the 1990s in a Baptist church. And I don't know if any of you have experienced it. It's quite a niche upbringing. There's a lot of clapping. There's a lot of flag waving. We had a felt banner making group that made Bible verses out of felt. It was quite a random one. I personally was in an interpretive dance group called Devotion in Motion. We're very proud of that name. It was it took us a while to come up with. And all that to say, my Sunday school experience was it was quite niche. There was a lot of craft going on, a lot of colours. It was fun. But this story came up again and again. But the way that Elijah was portrayed to me in this story was that he has totally failed. That he has let fear take control and he's on the run. All of that is probably true. To be fair, I would be absolutely terrified if Queen Jezebel had set a death warrant on me. But I think we so often overlook where he runs to. Because in that moment of fear, and that moment of just being absolutely terrified, he runs to the mountain of God. When fear takes over, when his courage falters, he makes his way relentlessly for 40 days and for 40 nights to seek out his refuge place, his hiding place. And the reason that Elijah knew where to run to in this time of crisis was because he'd walked and talked with God in ordinary life. You know, it was second nature for him to turn to God. So what does it mean to walk and talk with God? Well, first and foremost, it looks like building a relationship with God in ordinary life. I love the question that God asks Elijah when he reaches that mountain. He just says, what are you doing here? And in the moment, like that, the good, the bad, the ugly, it all just spills out of Elijah. And I don't know if you can relate to that. Someone kind of asks you, oh, how are you doing? Hoping for a quick 5-second response, but they've caught you on an off day and you're going to tell them exactly how you're doing, much to the other person's disappointment. But I think what's happening here is Elijah's just being brutally honest. Like he's reached the lowest of the low and the pain starts to surface. The weariness, the disappointment, it just all bubbles up. And I don't know what would surface for you tonight if you were asked that. But I love that we have permission to be brutally honest with God. Elijah shows us here that we can give the unfiltered version of how we're really doing. And God's response to Elijah is totally brilliant, because in that moment he doesn't offer solutions. He doesn't try to fix him. He doesn't even try to encourage him. All he says is, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord's about to pass by. You know, in that moment of deep pain and of deep hurt, God just offers Elijah his presence. And I want to acknowledge that for some people tonight, when you hear that God wants to meet with you, you're expecting the rebuke. You're expecting to be told off, or you're not entirely sure what God would say to you. And if that's you, what I want to say to you tonight is that God's heart is first and foremost for relationship with you. That before we ever choose to engage with him, he's already chosen us. If life seems to be spinning out of control for you tonight, God's desire is to meet you with his presence. I remember a few years ago when I was in my final year of university, and people have this horrible knack of asking you what's next, and I had absolutely no clue. And it's an incredibly frustrating question. I don't know if any of you can relate there, here tonight, but I had these three options I thought sounded quite good, kind of positive career choices. And what I thought I'd do, I wanted to seek God on it. I wanted to try and work out what he wanted me to do. So I thought I'd kind of lay these three options out on the table, and I'd kind of dedicate a week and kind of start praying at the start of each day, just, Lord, let me know what you fancy me doing. Lightning bolt moment would be amazing, but if you could just speak to me, that would be great. And so kind of Monday morning came, I sat down, and I just kind of listening, trying to hear, God, what do you want me to do? And all I heard in that time were just four words, and it was just, Emma, I love you. And I thought, oh, that's nice, thanks God. Like, anything else? Nothing. So I thought, okay, the next day, kind of sit down, Emma, I love you. And the next day after that, Emma, I love you. And the next day after that, Emma, I love you. And it was deeply frustrating, because what I wanted to know in that moment wasn't that, you know, God loved me. I wanted to know a career plan. I wanted to know a strategy. I wanted to know what I was going to be doing. But I think God so often ignores the most pressing questions to answer the deepest longings of our hearts. Because in that moment, I didn't need to know what the career plan was. He made me just sit in the reality that I was loved. And if I'm being really honest, I didn't know that. I didn't know that I was loved. Because my heart was filled with fear in that moment. I wanted to make the right choice. I didn't want to fail. And so God told me he loved me. And it was from that place of discovering that I was already loved. I was already chosen. I was already accepted. That I found a deep freedom to pursue the things that were actually on my heart. What I needed before a career plan or before a strategy, which are all good things, by the way, I'm a big fan of those things. But what brought me to life and allowed me to live in freedom was to know that I was loved by my Heavenly Father. So walking and talking with God, it's all about relationship. It's about letting ourselves be known, being brutally honest with God, and then allowing him to love us every moment of every day. So firstly, walking and talking with God is about relationships. Secondly, walking and talking with God brings perspective. And we see this really clearly with Elijah here in 1 Kings 19. You know, part of Elijah's complaint is that he's all alone. Elijah's fear, his tiredness, has made it seem like he's the only one left. Yet in that moment, God brings unbelievable truth to Elijah's really warped perspective. He reminds Elijah of the bigger picture. Yet there's still, in fact, 7,000 other people that he's conveniently forgotten about who haven't bowed the knee to Baal. And I love how wrong Elijah is, but how often do we let our fear levels or our energy levels dictate what we believe? I grew up in the lovely county of Essex, which, you know, was a total joy, but it meant that for our family holidays, we sought out any form of green space possible. And I remember one of those holidays, the family of four kind of packed into the car, and we took our dog, Scooby, with us. He was a little yellow Labrador, and he was a brilliant dog, but he didn't really obey any rules at all. He kind of was a law unto himself. And I remember we kind of packed up, went to Wales, found a big field, and I don't know what possessed us in this moment, but we thought it'd be fun to let him off the lead, which was just not a good idea. So we kind of rolled up and undid his collar, kind of, go forth, Scooby, enjoy the green pastures. And he shot off, and he went straight across the field, buried through a hedge, ended up in the next field, which was full of cows. Now, I mean, I'm from Essex. I don't know much about farming, but I knew at 7 years old that cows and dogs do not mix. And to make matters worse, these cows were pregnant. So Scooby was having the time of his life. He was jumping up and down. These cows were mooing. They were going everywhere. It was complete carnage. We were kind of following on. My dad was blowing that dog whistle, which I have no idea what that does. And we were trying to give out the treats to Scooby. We were racking our brains from kind of puppy classes, which were obviously a waste of money. But we were really kind of calling his name. And it was like 10 minutes just running around this field. Nothing. Nothing was working at all. And I don't know if you've ever felt just an atmosphere shift. Well, that's what happened. All of a sudden, the tension started to rise. Something was wrong, and I didn't know what it was at all. But my dad, he grabbed my left hand, and he grabbed my sister's other hand, and he said, "Girls, we're leaving." And I was like, "What? You know, we can't. I mean, I know he's broken the rules, but we can't just leave our dog behind." And he said, "No, girls, we're leaving." And we left the field. And what I didn't know, and I only found out later, was that my dad, out of the corner of his eye, had seen a very, very angry farmer coming towards us. And to make matters worse, he had a shotgun, and he was threatening to shoot our dog. And my dad, in that decision, kind of took the executive decision just to kind of get out of the field and let the dog sort it out. But all of that to say, the reason I tell you that story is because in that moment, my dad saw the bigger picture. He could see something that I didn't see. And the reason I left that field and my beloved, incredibly dopey dog behind was because I trusted my dad. I trusted his perspective on the situation. And as we build relationship with God, as we grow in intimacy with him, we start to trust his perspective, even when it seems foolish. Part of practicing the presence of God is asking God what he's doing in that moment of our day and being open to his response. Jesus said, I only do what I see my Father doing. And if we want to be people who follow the way of Jesus, we have to constantly ask ourselves, God, what are you doing here? What are you doing in this moment? Asking God for his perspective when we're having a difficult conversation with a friend, or asking God what he might want to say to someone, to our colleague who's struggling at work. It's about cultivating a rhythm of opening up our lives to God, just the main and the plain, the ordinary life, and saying, God, what do you want to do with it? And we will definitely get it wrong. I remember I once took a train journey to just this random town that I felt God tell me to go to. And after I'd spent several hours in one of the beautiful coffee shops, all I discovered was that they sold quite nice coffee. I didn't hear a booming voice. I didn't hear have a big revelation for the waitress. Nothing. I think I just heard wrong. But I want to be the kind of person who's stepping out and trying to do what I think God's telling me to do. And we'll get it wrong. We'll end up in random towns. But I want to be putting God first. I want to be giving it a go. But there will be times when we get it right, when God uses us in incredibly humbling ways to show his love to people. And what a privilege that God uses us, you and me, to speak his words of truth and his words of life to the people around us. So are we listening? And do we have space in our life to respond to his whispers? So just lastly, walking and talking with God is a call to faithfulness. And I think there's something really beautiful and massively understated about a call to faithfulness. You know, following Jesus isn't just this one-time decision, it's a journey. It's a faithful commitment to walk with him. And it's not always glamorous, it takes time, it takes energy. We don't always see its fruit, but it's one of the most beautiful and powerful things we can do. So what does faithfulness look like? Well, for Elijah, it looked like trekking through a desert for 40 days and 40 nights to meet with God. And I know I often overlook that point. It's just a kind of a quick verse. I think he's a prophet. He meets with God all the time. The presence of God must just be with him. But the fact is that he's chosen to pursue God. I think the other thing that sticks out to me in that passage is that God tells Elijah to go back the way he came. That's faithfulness. You know, he's run to God. He's sought him out in his time of trouble. But God just tells him to trust him and to go back. You know, the death warrant's still out there. That hasn't changed. But Elijah's faithful to the call of God on his life. He's committed to walking and talking with God above anything else. You know, faithfulness looks like the call to obedience, even when it costs us, or it doesn't seem to make any sense. And the beauty of this, the thing I love the most about this, is that God doesn't ask us to do anything that he isn't prepared to do himself. Because before we were faithful to God, God was faithful to us. The gospel, the birth, the death, the resurrection of Jesus is the story of God's faithfulness. You know, that long before we chose him, he chose us. Romans 5 verse 8 says that whilst we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So what does being faithful to God look like for you tonight? What crossroads are you at? What feelings are you dealing with? What situations will meet you on Monday morning when you head back to work? Where have you the choice to be faithful to God in? I just wanted to share what I felt God challenged me on a few months ago. And I kind of felt the priority list, that God was kind of getting lower on the priority list and other things were starting to creep up. And I just felt God challenged me on this and about choosing to be faithful. So I just want to read to you what I felt him say to me. So I just felt God say, "The vision is me. If that's all you get, would that be enough for you? If you settle for any less than me, you've missed it all. If all I asked of you was to love me well, wholeheartedly, fully, for the rest of your days, would that be enough? Live simply for me. My sole purpose for creating you was so we, you and I, could walk and talk in the garden. I'm not just calling you to start with that. I'm calling you to that." We're not just called to start with relationship with God. We're called to relationship with God. And whilst I totally believe that God has a plan for us and he's given us amazing gifts and talents to use for his glory, if we pursue anything else above relationship with God, we miss it all. And this isn't about personal pietism or about improving ourselves or becoming insular. As we spend time in God's presence, we get to know God's heart. That our God's a powerful God. That his heart is for injustice to be stopped, for seeing the oppressed free, for seeing corruption and manipulation put to an end, to see the desire, he desires to see the lonely put into family. When we live in God's presence, faithfully spending time with him, God uses us to bring his hope to the world. But to be hope-filled people, to be those people who bring life to those around us, we have to spend time in his presence. We can't do it in our own strength. So what does the next step in the journey look like for you? Just as I wrap up, maybe you're sitting here and you've never known Jesus. You don't know what that vision of fullness of life looks like. You don't know what it means to see transformation in your life, but you're interested. Why don't you just simply ask Jesus tonight to show himself to you and see what happens? Or come and speak to one of us at the end. I'd love to tell you more about what following Jesus looks like. Maybe for others, we've walked with Jesus for a little while, but it feels like we're staring at that patio full of overgrown weeds. We feel disappointed. We feel forgotten. We feel lonely. You know, our friends seem to be doing really well. Their careers seem to be taking off. Their relationships are going really well, but we just feel stuck. In a moment, why don't you come forward for prayer, just as Elijah stood vulnerably on the side of that mountain waiting for God's presence to pass by? Why don't you come and do the same? For others of us, it's a more practical step. What about committing to spending 15 minutes just daily in God's presence, asking him to come and fill you afresh? You might not hear any booming voice. You might not even feel his tangible presence, but it's about resting in the knowledge that God is God and he's a God of love who loves us because he loves us, because he loves us. For others of you, it might be that you're spending time with God daily, but you want to invite him into your whole day. Why don't, on the hour, every hour, just shoot up a quick prayer. Lord, what are you doing here? And then see what happens. See what he highlights to you. The amount of times when I've prayed something like that and I've noticed someone who seems to be having a hard day, who just needs a word of encouragement, or I'm reminded of a friend who I know isn't feeling well and I send them a quick text. Whatever it is, whatever it looks like for you, commit to it. Make it a discipline. Regardless of the outcome, ask God to surprise you. I'd love to hear the stories kind of 5 years, 10 years from now that started with the simple decision just to invite God into the small moments of our day. Because slowly over time, as we allow God to take increasing control, as we faithfully commit to him, we're prepared for his wonder. You know, we realize we're walking in greater freedom than we used to, that we no longer allow the insecurities that tell us we need to prove ourselves to govern our thoughts, but we base our decisions on truth and on love and on the fact that he is for us. We begin to cultivate a settled peace that isn't shaken by circumstance. And it's this call to faithfulness, to putting in the years of seeking God's presence, that really excites me. Because it's the faithful men and women of God that he uses to change the world. Time and time again, when you see God move throughout history, when you see his outpouring upon cities and upon nations, behind it all is just a faithful bunch of followers who have committed to seeking God's presence above anything else. Who have committed to following Christ faithfully in the small things, in the mundane of life. And I'd love that to be our story at KXC. that we'd be known as a people just committed to walking and talking with God in the garden.